Professor Wood, why is this incorrect history? Why is your history different than what they're learning in school?
Well, Dr. Stan, first of all, thanks for having me back again. It's my pleasure. I think because if you pick up the typical textbook that people are learning from today, whether it's in high school, elementary school, college, it's got certain biases to it. It's got certain emphases. It's got certain things that are, I think, distorted, and I think it has certain things that are left out altogether, aspects of American history that, frankly, the intellectual elites would rather that Americans not know about. And the reason that they seem not to care for my book, but Americans, I'm happy to say, are very enthusiastic, is that I'm trying to tell a lot of the suppressed stories and trying to correct some of the distortions of the record and some of the idolization of certain presidents, you know, at the expense of others, frankly, in American history.
And, of course, you have some very interesting things in there about the Clinton years, the Clinton administration. Do you want to cover any of those things?
Well, the Clinton administration is actually where the book ends. I go from the colonial period through Clinton in 270 pages, which is no mean feat, that. But I conclude with Bill Clinton by pointing out that, you know, a bunch of things about him, that to say that Bill Clinton was a centrist only goes to show how the whole political spectrum has shifted, if he would qualify as a centrist. But I also talk about Bill Clinton's foreign policy, which he had a lot of opponents, Bill Clinton, but a lot of times on his foreign policy he got a pass. But I'm arguing that it was his foreign policy that was particularly disastrous, because, to make a long story very short, his various interventions in the Balkans and bombing the Serbs repeatedly in the 1990s, what that basically led to was the triumph of radical Islam in the Balkans, where now it turns out that basically hundreds and hundreds of radical Mujahideen fighters were flown in under Clinton's supervision to fight against the Serbs, and it was assumed that they would all go home. But they didn't. They stayed there, and now the State Department is saying that this is a new hotbed of Islamic radicalism, and it's because of Clinton's interventionist foreign policy. So this has been called the biggest unknown scandal of the Clinton years. So that's the type of thing that my book is trying to uncover.
And, of course, you mentioned that Bill Clinton sent troops overseas 44 times in 8 years for one or another escapade. I mean, that is incredible.
It really is. I mean, it's a media-driven foreign policy. It's a foreign policy driven by, you know, frankly, what's on television, what piques people's interest, rather than, you know, what is good for this country and what makes sense for us to be doing.
Well, of course, very little that's going on today really makes sense, but
that's right.
I think that's really why your book is important and why we certainly asked you to come back to be with us, and why we really would like to get people to read it, because you bring out a lot of things that people haven't thought of. For instance, the fact that we were backing the radical Islamists, you know, in both Bosnia and in Serbia. Why would we do that? I mean, we knew that Osama bin Laden was wicked. We knew that Osama bin Laden had already been responsible for the first bombing of the World Trade Center and for many other atrocities. And yet we're backing his fighters in those areas. We'll be back in just a moment with Professor Thomas Woods talking about a politically incorrect history. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Professor Thomas E. Woods. We're talking about his book, The Politically Incorrect History, or A Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And how has this book been moving on the New York Times bestseller list?
Well, when it came out, it really premiered in early December, and it hit the New York Times bestseller list by the end of the month and stayed on for 12 weeks. In spite of the fact that I'm not a talk show host, I don't have access to the media all the time. It just seemed to have a momentum of its own, and I couldn't be happier about it. It stunned me more than anybody.
Well, I think it's an important book. In fact, Ron Paul said, Professor Woods heroically rescues real history from the politically correct memory hole. Every American should read the book. And there really is a memory hole. History has been rewritten to distort the truth, and I think it's really so important that people understand that. And we were just talking before we went on the air with the local audience that, you know, during the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton had sent troops overseas on one or another mission 44 times. In fact, in both Bosnia and Serbia, why, we were financing the radical Islamic fundamentalists, who were, of course, there at the behest of Osama bin Laden. So why was America supporting Osama bin Laden's fighters in Bosnia in the mid-1950s, 1995 or so, and then, of course, in Serbia? None of this really makes sense to me. Does it make any sense to you?
It doesn't, Dr. Stan. I mean, I can try and make a guess as to why Clinton did it, but I'll just first of all point out that that more and more specialists in this area are looking back and saying that this was a critical moment, that by lending support, frankly, to Islamists in this part of the world, it has created now a beachhead for them that is going to produce all kinds of grief for Europe in the future. But the best guess that I have is that Clinton probably thought he could ingratiate himself into the favor of Muslims around the world by being able to say, well, okay, sure, we've got the sanctions on Iraq, and that's causing a lot of problems for those people, but look, we did intervene to help you guys against the Serbs, so you have to like us. But it doesn't seem to have worked particularly well. We don't seem to have anything to show for that.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you have one very fascinating story in here about only unqualified applicants may apply. And I really want you to sort of develop that, because this goes along with the whole idea of affirmative action, that, you know, we've got to help the downtrodden. So, I mean, and of course, most people think, look, a person ought to be picked to do a job, you know, independent of their sex, independent of their color. Can they do the job? Can they do it better than somebody else? And when we get back here in just a moment, I want you to address this whole idea. Only the unqualified may apply. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Professor Wood, and we're talking about his book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And I was asking him about this idea under the Clinton administration that only the unqualified should apply. Now, ordinarily, you think only the qualified should apply for jobs, but could you tell that incredible story?
Well, sure. In fact, in my unfortunately all too brief discussion of Bill Clinton, I point out that one piece of evidence that Clinton was not in any way some kind of new Democrat is that, you know, his campaign slogan about affirmative action was mend it, don't end it. So in other words, supposedly he recognizes the problems with it, but we'll just fix it rather than abolishing it. Well, here are some examples of the type of thing that went on in during the Clinton administration. For example, in the U.S. Forest Service, they actually issued a job advertisement that said, I kid you not, word for word, only unqualified applicants may apply. And then, when that seemed to get some bad publicity, they changed it and said, only applicants who do not meet job requirement standards will be considered, as if that's an improvement. And it turns out that because of this bizarre policy, crucial firefighting positions were left vacant because there weren't enough unqualified applicants to fill them. I mean, talk about living in a George Orwell world. Or even at the Pentagon, the policy was that, quote, special permission will be required for the promotion of all white men without disabilities. And this type of thing just goes on and on and on in one aspect of life after another. And in fact, when in California, as you would well know, Dr. Stan, when California was trying to abolish affirmative action in university admission, it was the Clinton administration that intervened and tried to prevent the implementation of that policy.
And I think it's as wrong to take somebody who's incompetent in because they happen to be of a different color or they happen to be of a different gender as it is to certainly discriminate. I don't think you should discriminate. I think that everything should be colorblind. But we have just gone, frankly, mad, and we've actually trained a lot of people who are totally incompetent, and many of them are in key positions in government running the insane asylum today.
That's right. I mean, I guess in a certain sense, I would favor affirmative action in government if it would make government less efficient. You know, like at the IRS, let's have affirmative action there. You know, the least qualified people you can find, put them in the IRS.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something. Yes, I really appeal to by that idea. We talk about, does busing improve the black performance? In other words, did the black children do better after we began busing them from school to school? What really happened to the education of the black children after the federal government intervened to try to improve things?
Well, it turns out that if you review the social science literature on this, you can't find any study that finds really any positive educational result coming out of this. So literally, hard as it may be to believe, billions of dollars were spent frankly, destroying and screwing up neighborhoods by busing students 2 hours a day. On average, it was about 2 hours a day around Los Angeles, busing them all over the place, and they had nothing to show for it, probably worse race relations than before. And in fact, even black parents, who on average had only slightly favored the policy, even they began to turn against it when they saw that it was really having no good effects and largely bad ones by destroying their communities. But as I say, there seemed to be no educational good that came out of it. And even if you say, well, hey, at this school, black educational performance improved, well, true, but so did white at that school, and so did blacks in largely black schools. So there's no apparent upward trend in schools that happen to be integrated as a result of busing, as compared to any other school.
Well, I think one of the great tragedies of modern times is what the federal bureaucrats did to the black family. They destroyed the black family. Today, 75% of black children are born out of wedlock. I mean, the once a very solid black family that had a husband and a wife, a mother and a father and children, and raised them and worked hard to give them a better life, it really doesn't exist in a lot of communities today. And, of course, one out of every three young black men is either in prison, parole, or on probation. How could we have done such a bad job unintentionally?
I know it. I mean, it's really hard to understand that this could really have been unintentional. It was such a bizarre blunder. And, of course, a lot of gang activity, even Dan Quayle, got in trouble for trying to point out that gang activity a lot of times is the result of young kids who haven't had fathers, and they're looking for some kind of discipline and some kind of belonging, and what do they find around them? Well, they find gangs, so there are all kinds of negative social consequences. Supposedly, all of these measures that wound up destroying the black family were intended to abolish poverty by giving people money and this and that, but of course the terms on which people got money were, a single mom could get money as long as there was no man in the house, as long as she was unmarried, and so it began to perpetuate the very types of policies that promote poverty. It turns out that if you can just do three things, if you can get and stay married, if you can complete high school, and if you can get and keep for at least a year even a minimum wage job, it turns out you've got only a 1% chance of being in poverty in America. Those are the only things you have to do. And, and yet government's got all these billion and trillion dollar price tag programs that have done nothing but destruction. Whereas all you need to do, if you have just the discipline to do those three things, almost certainly you're going to be okay. Unfortunately, the black leadership in this country, to say that they've fallen down on the job would be the understatement of the year. None of them want to say that government is to blame or government isn't the solution. None of them want to admit that there's anything wrong, but you just walk down the corridor of an inner-city public school, and you tell yourself that there's nothing wrong or that this school just needs a few thousand more dollars. There's a serious, serious problem here, and it's front-page news when somebody like Bill Cosby has the nerve to even mention that it exists. There's no way you're going to fix the problem if you can't even talk about it.
And I really appreciate what Cosby is saying. He's saying you've got to learn to speak right, and the parents, are not teaching their kids to speak good English. And how are you going to get ahead when you talk like a rapper with an accent that nobody can understand? I think, certainly to Bill Cosby's credit, he's saying what everybody should have been saying a long time ago, but most of the black leadership, like Jesse Jackson, really, of course, are more interested in, what they're going to get out of it rather than, of course, what they can give to the black population.
Right, of course.
Let's get into the Marshall Plan. Now, one of the things we were told, the Marshall Plan really rescued Europe after the Second World War, and all the wonderful things the Marshall Plan did, America, of course, brought prosperity back to Europe. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's an idea that I think a lot of people believe. I mean, people on the left and people on the right believe, but it turns out that it's actually not true. I think the reason people think it is that they say, well, Western Europe was doing badly before the Marshall Plan. Then the U.S. instituted this aid policy called the Marshall Plan to help them, and then there was recovery. So therefore, they think the aid must have caused the recovery. But that's a logical fallacy. I mean, just because two things happen one after the other doesn't mean one caused the other. And so what I'm arguing in my book is that, in fact, there does not seem to be any correlation. If anything, the correlation seems to be negative. Because if you look at a country like Britain, which got twice as much Marshall aid as Germany did, Britain had terrible economic growth following that, whereas Germany had such a tremendous explosion in economic activity that they had to coin a whole new word for it in German, the Wirtschaftswunder. So there's that fact. There's the fact that Austria and Greece got a lot of Marshall Plan aid, but they really began their economic recovery only as it was being phased out. And France, Germany, and Italy had already started to recover before they got this aid. So there doesn't seem to be any real correlation. What produced the recovery in Western Europe was that these governments, little by little, or in some cases dramatically, as in Germany, they simply restored private property, they got rid of their wartime price controls, they restored a free market economy. And that same engine of free market, basically miracles, that took a totally destroyed Japan and made it a powerhouse, and took a totally destroyed Germany, and or at least West Germany, and made it a powerhouse, is what is to thank for the Western European recovery, not some basically international welfare program. Welfare doesn't work in foreign policy any more than it does at home.
And, of course, what people have forgotten is that after the Second World War, Winston Churchill was voted out, and they brought in the socialists, and it was the socialists there in England getting all that money from the United States, and there was shortages of everything in England. I mean, you're talking about going up into the 1950s, and it wasn't until they got rid of the socialists that they could get back to any sort of a stable sort of economy.
Yeah, exactly, and it's so funny that even to this day, almost no one draws any lessons from this. You know, I mean, you still hear the same old, it's not quite as bad. I mean, people now have to acknowledge some of the virtues of the market, but even still, it's like no one ever learns anything from this.
Well, could you talk about Operation Keel Haul? Because I think this is one of the most significant events in the post-war period, and yet, of course, it's been totally suppressed, in my opinion, by the controlled media. Most people have never heard of Operation Keel Haul.
Yeah, you couldn't be more right. You couldn't be more right. And here's a classic example of suppressed history that you won't find in your schools, and you won't find on television. At least in this country, you won't find it. Operation Keel Haul refers to a program that basically took place after World War II ended, and it involves prisoners of war, Russian prisoners of war, being returned to Russia. Now, on the surface, that seems normal, because naturally, at the end of a war, you would return prisoners to their home country. But in the case of Russian prisoners, unlike American and British prisoners of war, who of course wanted to go back to America and Britain, the Russian POWs, by and large, did not, surprise, surprise, want to go back to Stalinist Russia. In fact, some of them had, after they'd been captured, fought against Stalin to try to rid their country of him, and Stalin was not particularly interested in trying to discriminate between who fought against him and who didn't. He held all these prisoners in contempt, and it meant that at least a million of them were sent back to Stalin against their will and were either killed or worked to death. And it was an unbelievable atrocity that the British and American governments engaged in.
And, of course, it's totally suppressed here in the United States, because how could the American people accept the fact that we forcibly repatriated, the figure varies between 1 and 5.8 million, but it doesn't matter whether it was 500,000. The important thing is, our leaders sent those people back, many of them to their death. And you would totally suppress that information here. It's Operation Keel Haul. You'll find it up on the Internet. And, of course, we'll be back and just discussed in Professor Wood's book. We'll be right there, back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting the attention of the smart money investor. And that's with no small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Professor Thomas Wood. His book, A Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, it's an easy book to read. It's got a lot of the information that we talk about and we think is so vitally important. So, but let's get back to the background of the First World War and the propaganda that was used to get us into that war. Would you want to just tell that story? Because I think it's so important for people to understand the past, because you can't understand the present unless you understand the past.
Well, that's right. And, of course, with World War One, which went on from 1914 to 18, the U.S. didn't enter until April 1917. So during those few years of staying out, Americans were little by little getting, you know, one side of the story. They were by and large getting the British side of the story. The British had managed to, in effect, to prevent the Germans from communicating very well. And so a lot of British propaganda came in. And in particular, Americans were hearing a lot of stories about atrocities carried out by the Germans in Belgium. Because the Germans, when they went into France, they went through Belgium. And they weren't supposed to do that. Belgium was a neutral country. And although we now know that the Germans did in fact carry out some atrocities against some people they believed were engaged in a guerrilla uprising against them, the kinds of stories that came to the U.S. were just almost unbelievably absurd. People were being told that Belgian babies were having their hands cut off, or they were being tossed from one bayonet to another, or that nuns were being violated and then killed, or margarine was being made out of the corpses of Belgians, and it just got more lurid and bizarre all the time. And well, finally, Clarence Darrow, who was a notoriously, very well-known American lawyer, finally said, look, if you can point me to one Belgian boy who had his hands cut off by a German soldier, I'll give you $1,000. And in those days, that was like $17,000. Nobody took him up on it. And after the war was over, it became quite clear that these stories had been invented, manufactured, twisted, photographs had been faked, all in order to turn American opinion against the Germans. It worked. It didn't get the U.S. into the war right away, but that's the type of thing governments have become very, very skilled at doing, and we see it on a huge scale in World War One.
All right, fine. And then what about the sinking of the Lusitania? This is such an important part of it. Most people honestly think that we went to war because of the Lusitania, but that wasn't sunk. It was sunk in 1915. We didn't go to war until 1917, April of 1917. So what was this all about, the Lusitania? Why was that important?
Well, the Lusitania was basically the best known cruise liner in the world. It was a British cruise liner that had about 128 Americans or so were going to died on this thing when it was torpedoed by a German sub. Now, the situation is this. Basically, the British and the Germans both had a policy against each other on the high seas. The Germans had a submarine warfare policy where if you were in the waters around Great Britain, you were in danger of being torpedoed. They came up with that policy because the British, with the greatest navy in the world, had imposed a starvation blockade on the Germans to try to starve German civilians. So to retaliate against that, the Germans came up with the submarine policy. Now, it is still, nevertheless, a great atrocity for the Germans to have fired this torpedo on a cruise liner. At the same time, the Lusitania was an auxiliary member of the British Navy, and they thought that the Lusitania was armed. It wasn't. But the German submarine captains knew that even British merchant ships and civilian ships had been instructed to ram submarines if they saw them. Submarines were notoriously frail. You could just split them right in half by ramming them. So when the German submarine captain spotted the Lusitania, he took no chances and opened fire on it, and he had sunk the best known ship in the world. It later turned out that this Lusitania was carrying thousands of cases of ammunition and was actually, in effect, shielding this ammunition by, you know, with passengers on board. Was, you know, in effect saying, you better not fire on this because you're going to kill all these civilians, but meanwhile, we're transporting war material through these waters.
And of course,
that's what happened.
But the other thing that really bothered me was that the Germans had put ads in the paper telling the Americans not to go on that ship.
Exactly. Warned them, do not go aboard this ship. You're going at your own risk. It's very dangerous. And everyone laughed at that.
But of course, the State Department encouraged them to go on it, knowing full well that Germans had said they were going to sink the boat. Why would our State Department have done that, encourage Americans to go on a ship when the Germans said they were going to sink it? Because they condemned those people to death.
That's right.
In fact, there's
so much we don't know about
that. And William Jennings Bryant, the Secretary of State, was so infuriated with that. My understanding is that he actually resigned shortly after that.
That's right.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Professor Thomas Woods, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to History.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hi, Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Thomas Woods. We're talking about his book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, which apparently intrigued a lot of people because a lot of people realize that we're being dumbed down in our schools. What is being talked about on so much of talk radio really is not true. What we hear so much on television has very little to do with reality. Although once in a while you really get a good program, but so many of them really are designed not to reveal but to conceal the truth about history, even up there on the History Channel. Now, one of the things you talk about, and I think it's so important to cover before we go to our callers, would be the subject of the real cause of the Civil War. Everybody believes that we fought the Civil War for slavery, and actually that's why Abraham Lincoln went to war, because he wanted to free the slaves. Would you like to pick up and discuss that issue?
Yeah, well, this one, I think an honest historian, if that hasn't yet become an oxymoron, will admit that certainly Lincoln didn't go to war to free the slaves, but that is nevertheless certainly what people are taught in elementary school. My students come to my classroom in college fully believing this, but the fact is that at least for the first 18 months of the war, Lincoln had slavery was not on his mind. What he wanted to do was prevent the secession of the southern states. Some people say for economic reasons, others say for political, philosophical reasons. He didn't believe there was a right to secede, but the slave issue was not on his mind. In fact, he famously said that if he could save the Union by freeing the slaves, he would do that, but if he could save it by not freeing them, or by freeing some and leaving others in bondage, he'd do those things too. In fact, so willing was Lincoln to allow the slave system to persist that he even said that he was willing to accept an amendment to the Constitution that would forever have prevented the federal government from ever interfering with slavery in the future if that's what it took to keep the southern states from leaving the Union or bring them back in. So, you know, the truth and the reality, as usual, is far more interesting and complex and refreshing than the comic book version that we're all too often given.
And I think it's so interesting that, as you pointed out on a previous program, that Lincoln freed the slaves in the South, which he couldn't do it because they were actually the states that seceded, but he left the slaves in the North who he could have freed, and he left them in slavery.
That's right. In fact, the British Prime Minister at the time thought that was highly amusing, that supposedly this anti-slavery president has freed all the slaves in areas not under his jurisdiction and left them all in bondage in those that were.
Well, we always say that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. Would you mind taking some calls?
We've got, my pleasure, sure.
Everybody's out there calling from all across the country. Let's go to Andrew, who's calling from New York. Hi, Andrew. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm calling from Rochester, New York.
Oh, great.
A big New World Order city, as you know.
Oh, well, now, you could never surpass Santa Cruz, where I live, but go ahead.
Okay. I know we're talking about history today, but I have a question about today and counter movements, which I think, Dr. Stan, you're a part of, which I consider myself a part of. How do we kind of discern actual and truthful movements against kind of the New World Order versus false flag or agent provocateurs?
All right. I know you're speaking in what? Are you speaking about the anti-war movement? Are you speaking about immigration movement? What specifically? Could you give us an idea of what specific field, or just the whole general field of what's going on today?
Kind of as far as the media is.
All right, fine. Would you like to address that, Professor Woods? The question is, how do we know when, you know, when we see somebody taking a position, if they're really sincere, or maybe they're sort of leading the opposition?
Thanks a lot, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right, fine. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's interesting to get a call from a fellow New Yorker on a show coming out of California. You've got quite a reach there, Dr. Well, Stan.
We are blessed to have stations all across America pulling down the program.
That's wonderful. Well, this one, I mean, I think I took the question the way you did, you know, which is there are all kinds of disparate movements out there for this or that issue, and, you know, how do we know which are worthwhile and sincere and on the level and which are not? And, you know, I guess the answer is there's no easy answer other than you just need to use very good discernment on your own. You have to use your own good judgment. I mean, you know, some people would wonder, for instance, is Cindy Sheehan somebody worth supporting or not? And, you know, you have to, again, use your own individual judgment. I wish there were a good rule of thumb. I guess my thinking is, I remember when NAFTA was being proposed back in the I guess, early 90s, and on the TV, we kept getting these TV commercials saying, look at all the secretaries of state that support NAFTA. Look at all the former presidents who support NAFTA. Look at all these people. And I thought to myself, well, I know right away this must be bad. So I would look at who is on the board of directors, I would say, and then go from there. If you've never heard of any of the people, it's probably a better organization than if they're all Henry Kissinger and whatever. I mean, that would be my shorthand answer.
I think that's a very good answer. If I could just comment for Andrew, so many of the things that are going on today, both sides, in other words, the pro-war movement and the anti-war movement are both manipulated by the same side, because you always want a controlled opposition. Now, I saw that during the Vietnam War, and the anti-war movement during Vietnam was financed and backed by the communists. But who was financing and backing the communists? That's, of course, what nobody ever wanted to talk about. And there was, a number of books written at that time by people on the left saying they were being financed by the people on the right. So I think that you have to realize that so often we are misled. You just have to use your good judgment. You have to develop a certain amount of discernment. But do not follow a fad and do not follow leaders unless you really trust them. And even some of the best leaders we have within the conservative movement today, people I've known for many years, sometimes are either mistaken or they can be manipulated or simply bought off. So we've got a real difficult time, and I think sometimes we need an awful lot of prayer to make intelligent decisions. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling in from Santa Cruz. Mike, did you have a question for our guest? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, referring back quickly to the disinformation that your guest was speaking about just ahead of World War II or World War I. Well, both the Lusitania and the Belgian rumors. Well, fast forward to the spring of 2001. And the way the public opinion was turned against Afghanistan in preparation for the invasion. We've been friends with Afghanistan for so many, many years, and all of a sudden, day after day in the newspapers, they're telling us about all these atrocities that all of a sudden the Afghans are committing on their own people, and so therefore we have to go straighten them out.
All right. What would your thought be on that, Professor Wood?
Well, I am inclined to be sympathetic to this. I mean, not that I would have any particular sympathy for almost any regime that would govern Afghanistan. I can't imagine one that I would want to live in, but I don't necessarily want to go to war with them either. We could also cite the example of what happened. You know, I was just entering college around the time of Desert Storm, and I think a lot of us remember now the way we were had about that, about supposedly all the atrocities that Saddam's men were carrying out in Kuwait, which was meant to turn us against Saddam, as if we need to invent things to turn us against Saddam. But we were told that that babies were being thrown out of incubators in the hospitals, and we got this tearful testimony that 60 Minutes solemnly put on the television from this young woman whose baby was supposedly killed by Saddam's men. Turned out she was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. I mean, talk about blatant, and I mean, no press organ picked up on that? Like, until, interestingly enough, after the war had already been declared, and then we discover that that was a hoax. It's interesting that the discoveries always come after the fact. Oh, we didn't know this. Come on now. You know, I mean, what's the matter? These people can find out what Michael Jackson had for breakfast on January 1st, 1977, but they don't know anything about the fact that the person giving us the propaganda is the daughter of the ambassador. What's going on here?
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I really think that the thing that whenever I hear these atrocity stories, I have to ask, are they real? Because I will tell you the very real atrocity stories, the Operation Keelhaul, the starving to death of between 43 and 46 million people in China between 58 and 66, and the Great Hunger there, the things that are going on in Rhodesia today, the things that are going on in Zaire today. Well, we just don't hear an awful lot about that. And yet the atrocity stories, whenever they come up with those atrocity stories, I wonder what they're trying to manipulate us into doing that we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that.
All right, well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. You have a question for our guest.
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. And, Professor, I wanted to ask, I thought I heard everything, and you said something so important I thought about a week ago. I'd like to ask you to help to flesh that out into a little more accuracy for me. That was, I'm guessing that aside from what I'm speculating is relatively little from Winona and other Soviet archives releases a few years back. Then you had mentioned the, I'm guessing, high-speed computers code cracking of the Soviet transmissions, which I think you said they're only 10% complete, and I speculated might be on go-slow orders, even still revealed some 350 additional active Soviet agents working for the Russian communists.
Okay.
Would that have been during the era of the malign McCarthy, and might we extrapolate out if 100% completed, we could expect 3,000 plus?
All right, well, let's get that Professor Wood's explanation. Thank you so much, Roger.
Thanks.
And, of course, the question is, what about, of course, the I think he's referring to the Verona intercepts, and of course, this whole idea that, that McCarthy was such an evil person because he was accusing innocent people of being communists.
Right, and you know, the guy who's really the expert on this is Stan Evans, who's an old-time conservative in D.C. who has been working on a book, and they keep saying it's slated to come out next year, every year, but I think he will have the definitive word, Stan Evans. He's the expert on this. He's dug up all kinds of useful information. Ann Coulter, in her book Treason, the one good part about that book, I think, is her treatment of McCarthy. She basically gets the information from Stan Evans. He is the source, and that's really going to reveal a lot. Stan Evans' reply every time somebody says, hey, what about all those innocent people who were not communists at all, whose lives and careers were ruined by McCarthy? Stan Evans' reply is, okay, name me one. Give me a name. Name me one person that accurately describes. And it turns out you can't. You can come up with a couple of names, but it turns out they were communists, or a lot of times people think of Hollywood figures who were unjustly accused, but that had nothing to do with McCarthy.
The Hollywood Ted, right.
Right. I mean, McCarthy was a senator, and that was the House Un-American Activities Committee. So that's the usual reply, is to say, name me one. Who really was victimized? What's interesting is, this is, I think, another example in American history of the division between the great mass of the American public, on the one hand, and the intellectuals on the other. Because a lot of the American people, frankly, admired McCarthy, even going into 1954, when McCarthy was going to be disgraced and toward the end, he was still, according to a Gallup poll, listed as the fourth most admired man in America. So, I mean, it goes to show there is that deep divide and chasm between the intellectuals and the American people. But I agree with the caller that, I think that even now we're probably still only scratching the surface of the extent of Soviet infiltration. And when you consider that the American media has absolutely no interest in this subject, I mean, suppose that they poured all their energies into it, think of what we would dig up. But, you know, needless to say, they're not.
It'll be a cold day when that happens.
It'll be pretty cold.
Let's go to Wes calling from Texas. Hi, Wes, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I'm curious, when your students are confronted with the truth, how would you characterize their responses, and how would you sort of break down the percentages of those that are willing to break out of sort of the paradigm that they've been in their entire lives and what they've been taught?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, we have to exclude from consideration, though, the students I have who are only half conscious or, you know, whatever. Not, they have no business being in a classroom, but we leave those out. The ones I'm just there to entertain, apparently, we leave those out. And, you know, the thing is that, although I've had, you know, I've had a Marxist in my class who was very outspoken and this and that, you know, by and large, my students respect me. You know, they've gotten to know me over the semester. They think I'm funny. I'm not that much older than they are. I watch The Simpsons also, and so they have, you know, they feel like they have some connection with me. And so when I say these things to them, they listen, and their first response is to say, "I can't believe I was scammed." I mean, I get this a lot. How could I have been taught the exact opposite of the truth? And then they want to always want to ask me, you know, they always want to ask me, what can we do now? What do I do with this information? And that one, it's a hard one to answer. I wish there was a quick little plan we could all follow. But the fact is that if I were to break it down percentage-wise, well, of the students who speak up and talk to me about these things, I mean, it's almost 100% who feel like they've been let in on something that they weren't supposed to find out about, and that thrills them. I mean, the feeling they have is of excitement. It's like they're detectives, like I'm helping them be detectives, and they're uncovering information that their parents don't know, or that their teachers either wanted to keep from them or didn't know. And for them, this is very exciting. I mean, I teach right now at just a 2-year school. So a lot of my students, you know, don't have a lot of self-esteem, or they feel like, well, I'm only at a 2-year school. But when I let them in on stuff that they wouldn't be taught even at Harvard, well, then they feel like this is the great equalizer. Now I have something on those people. And, you know, so this is why my job is so rewarding, is to get to see that.
And I think that's so important, and they're very, very fortunate to have you, because I was a victim of a liberal education, not educated, but indoctrinated when I was at the University of California. Anything else you wanted to ask, Wes?
One more quick question. Out of all the issues, I'm curious, do you find that the issue of the Civil War is more one of the more hot-button issues, maybe, where you get more resistance?
It is. But yet, I haven't gotten nearly the resistance you would think. And, you know, that's partly because the students are so, frankly, poorly educated coming in, they don't even know what's controversial. Like, I have a friend who teaches economics who says that 30 years ago, my students would come in and their heads would be filled with myths that I'd have to refute. He says, now they come in, and I have to teach them the myths and then refute the myths. So that's the situation.
Thanks so much, Wes. Oh, let's tell people how they can get your book. Do you have a website or any way people...
I have a website soon, but for now they can get my book either in the bookstores or at Amazon.com. There's actually a special offer. There's another politically incorrect guide to Islam that's just come out. And not by me, but they're selling them both together on Amazon. So Amazon's the way to go, or Barnes & Noble, any of those big sellers online.
And I think it's got a catchy title, and I think it people, of course, enjoy that. Well, let's go to Dale, who's been waiting patiently on the line here. You know, I think it's so important. If we could get these young people to listen to programs such as this one, where, of course, we take the historical perspective from the few people, some of the great historians out there, who really have written the proper history. Unfortunately, most of them are not teaching in our universities. In fact, most of them are long since dead.
Right.
And unfortunately today, most of our historians don't know history, because they've been trained by people who were financed by the great tax-exempt foundations that rewrote our history 50 years ago. That's a great tragedy. Well, let's go to Dale calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Dale. How are you doing?
Hey, wonderful, and great to hear this wonderful information. And being a historian, your guest there, I was wondering what his perspective is with what's been going on in Israel in the last week.
We're out of time, but thanks so much. Do you have any quick thoughts on Israel? Because It's What's the Mess Over There?
Oh, gosh, yeah, that'd have to be a whole other, well, other program.
I hope you'll come on again sometime.
I'd love to come on again. Thanks for having me.
And really appreciate it, and you've got so much to offer. We need to get the truth out to our people. God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless. Thanks.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society
created in
England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. BHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Have you purchased or invested in gold or silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our program, and I think it's so important that you understand that history is not written properly. That's why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it through and then get the references to the books that you need to read to understand what's going on. Some of them have been written by very left-wing people, like Professor Quigley's Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And Professor Quigley was Bill Clinton's mentor, but he was an honest historian who'd spent 20 years researching the secret society that became the Council on Foreign Relations. The book is 1,340 pages, something like that, but is must-reading for anybody who really wants to begin to put all of the pieces together and understand how the people within the secret society created the Boer War and created the First World War. Yes, and they even encouraged Adolf Hitler. They talk about appeasement. There wasn't appeasement. They were encouraging Adolf Hitler to take Alsace-Lorraine and Austria and, of course, the Sudetenland. Why? Because we needed another war to bring about the United Nations and the coming world government. So, and then, of course, James H. Billington's Fire in the Minds of Men, very important book. Foundations, their power and influence, pointing out how the great tax-exempt foundations financed historians. They bought them up. They purchased their services and got them to rewrite American history, because we couldn't let Americans know the true history of our country or of slavery or any of the major issues. So they simply rewrote history. And, of course, the new media monopoly, And, of course, that's written by Ben Bekdaken, a left-wing professor at the University of California in Berkeley, who talks about who controls the media today. Five mega corporations, Bertelsmann, Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, and, of course, Fox. Five mega corporations control the media and determine so much of what you think. So that's tragedy and hope. Fire in the minds of men. Foundations, their power and influence. The new media monopoly, and, of course, Brotherhood of Darkness is where you should start, and of course it will then begin leading you into all the books that you need to read to understand how capitalist financed communism to create the best enemy money could buy. Just like our government financed Saddam Hussein to create the best enemy money could buy. And if you doubt that we've backed, financed, and provided vast amounts of money for Saddam Hussein and provided him with the material he used to build his weapons of mass destruction, you just call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the article about Saddam Hussein. It's entitled, When an Ally Becomes an Enemy. When an ally becomes an enemy. If you want to know how we created the Islamic terrorist movement, and by actually spending $51 billion on radical textbooks to indoctrinate the young people who became the Taliban, who we killed when we moved in there, why, of course, that's called the ABCs of jihad, and we'll provide that to you free of charge. We want you to get the information. We want you to understand. We want you to think. We want you to challenge everything and then learn how to educate others. Now, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day. And then when you finish doing that, why, you can listen to the archive programs, and hopefully you'll get the information that you can get out. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our latest one on the reason we are in Iraq, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for the July newsletter. We are trying to expand our ministry to syndicate our program, starting on a new network in the Midwest in the mornings. We could certainly use your help if you're in a position to, because if we can't reach the American people, then we're going to lose this country. People have to understand what's really going on and the spiritual forces that are energizing everything that's going on. And if you can help, well, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle. For the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Until Monday, I won't be here tomorrow, but I'll be back with you Monday. Till then, may the Lord be with you.